I'm Tom Shepard with the Southeast Environmental Task Force, and we have Bob Reeves here, one of our members, and Gloria Fallon, a member of Rising Tide. We're in Hegwisch, which is the last neighborhood in the city of Chicago before you go into Indiana. Indiana is straight up ahead, about 3/4 of a mile is the Illinois-Indiana border. And this is the neighborhood of Hegwisch, named for Adolf Hegwisch, who had a steel plant here, a small steel plant that made, I think it was parts for rail cars, back like in the 1890s. U.S. Steel is the big one in Gary. That's still operating. And also over there, there's a couple of others that are owned by ArcelorMittal. That used to be Interlake. That was a big one. And Bethlehem. And that,
40,
I think,
50,000 people working in the steel industry here.
Probably more. And then when you take into account the ancillary businesses, you know, the related, steel-related. Yeah, there were all kinds of small plants besides the big ones. Over here, the big ones, and the first one that we'll see, well, we won't see it because it's gone, but it started out as Republic Steel, and that became LTV Steel before they went bankrupt and shut down about 1990 or so. On the right is Wolf Lake, and this was going to be our first stop, but you can barely see across it anyway, but we may stop there on the way back just to get a sense of the BP plant, because BP is right across the lake. This is a bi-state lake. Part of it's in Illinois and part of it's in Indiana. And BP's right across there. And on the left here, there are big slag piles that are left over from the days when the steel mills were going. You can't see them because of all these phragmites here. Over here, this is William Powers Conservation Area. That's the only state park within the city limits. You can barely maybe make out part of BP. You can see the towers and stuff out there. And then beginning here on the left, now this was all Republic Steel property over here. And on the right were related businesses, like this Gray Core. They hauled slag and all kinds of stuff that's related to steel, yeah. Mm-hmm. And now we got a big empty area over here. Let's see how many acres. Up to 197 acres right here. They left some buildings standing. A lot of them came down, but those are still operating right now. What they have over there now is a scrap operation, mostly steel scrap, and a lot of it gets shipped overseas. Some of it, I guess, goes over to Northwest Indiana because they still are producing steel over there and they use some of this for scrap, but we understand most of it gets sent off to China or India and used over there. So all these businesses on this side were related to steel. This building up here on the right was the Steel Workers Hall, and the retirees still meet there. I just wanted to point out while we are right here, this was the site of the the Memorial Day Massacre, where 10 steel workers were killed in 1937. So, yeah, here's a memorial to it. Every year we have a celebration over here. But right out there on the grounds are where the 10 workers were shot in the back following a picnic and a demonstration. They were heading toward the plant to demonstrate in front of the plant. They were shot down by Chicago police, in fact. Right, yeah. The Tribune celebrated that, the Chicago Tribune. I think old Mr. McCormick was still around at that time, if I'm not mistaken, and they thought that was just a great thing to happen. You know, teach these steel workers a lesson. And the strike really was crushed. It didn't work, but shortly after that, the federal government had to begin taking action, and the company had to pretty much get in line. Brought so much attention to the fact that the steel workers were on strike for better working conditions, better wages, and the right to organize.
So what year again?
1937. So, and you see the stack over there, that's the old Republic Steel coke plant was located.
Okay.
If we may get close enough to it to see the coke battery. It's about two-thirds of the way demolished right now. They finally shut it off in the, let's see, the early 2000-something. They were keeping it warm because they wanted to reopen over there and keep the coker going to produce coke for the companies in Northwest Indiana. And Beamster Bore Company, whose name we're going to hear because they're one of the properties that are storing the pet coke right now, they bought up a lot of this property when LTV went bankrupt, and they got this stuff for pennies on the dollar. And our organization and a lot of neighbors around here thought, well, steel's gone now, we're going to start cleaning up the area. And we were counting on the government to help us to do that. But Robert's shaking his head, and you're right, because the next thing that came up was they wanted to reopen that coke plant. And a lot of people thought, well, as long as it's going to keep steel workers working, okay. And that thing used to fire up. You could see it from all around here.
What would the outflow from that chimney look like?
Well, a lot of orange stuff descended on the neighborhood around here. If you had your clothes out, you made sure you went in and went out, and you know, if they were hanging on the line, you brought them in. Yeah, but at that time, and you know, part of what this narration is, at that time, people around here, they all worked for the plant. So when they saw that smoke and that soot, and they could smell it, the coke bacon, they figured that's their jobs, that's their livelihood, that's the bread on the table, you know. And so the trade-off was there. But later on, when they wanted to turn that into a coal gasification plant, after the coke idea, to keep the coke oven operating, fell apart, then the next scheme that came along, late in 2000, let's see, it was around 2008, 2009, a company called Leucadia wanted to come into the neighborhood and keep coal coming up here and make that into a gasification plant.
Southern Illinois coal?
Yep. It was Southern Illinois coal.
So it's really dirty coal.
Yeah, but they weren't going to burn it here. They were going to degasify it. The problem is they had to capture the CO2, and they didn't have a good plan for where that was going to go. They had plans talking about sequestering it and having it underground. Oh, yeah, that's going to be safe. Then they said, when nobody liked that idea, they said, well, we're going to pipeline it down to the Gulf of Mexico to use in the oil rigging down there to put it in under the earth, and I guess it, just like the fracking process, you know, would shoot the oil up. Now right up here, I hope we're going to be joined by the rest of our group. If we're lucky, let's cross our fingers that they're here. So anyway, we protested that Leucadia gasification plant. We gathered up signatures. We brought protests downtown to Springfield, and ultimately, the scheme fell apart because they wanted the utility companies to pay a higher rate for the gas to subsidize it. So I hope they're here. But we're going to take a walk up the bridge here. This is where we want to have our action. Yeah, I think it would get a lot of attention. Well, with all the press we've had, there's no doubt that they would love to come out for that.
Yeah.
And Gloria said she'll lead the charge.
I'm ready.
That
is. Yeah, all this, everything you see now. Right, right. What we're looking at here, all these barges here that are uncovered, which should be covered, is petroleum coke. Over there's the Beamster Bore Company, and there you can see
it's still processing off that conveyor.
It's going on the conveyor right now. And that's the problem on a windy day like today. Now they talk about spraying that stuff down. Does anybody see any water spraying on that?
Nope.
Okay, so on a day like today, there's a little bit of a wind. That stuff is blowing into the air. Right. is blown into the water as well.
Look at that conveyor belt. It's a 24/7 operation?
Right. Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah. And they haven't even geared up. They're only about one-third capacity right now. And during the winter, this stuff is going to freeze up. The river freezes for a spell. And then this stuff is going to be stockpiled. And they can't spray during the winter because the water would be freezing as it's coming out of their guns. And so the stuff just can blow all winter long. And, you know, we have heavy winds in the wintertime, obviously.
What is petroleum coke? Can you explain it?
This comes from the tar sands from Alberta, Canada. This is the tar sands are being pipelined to the refinery over in Indiana, in Whiting, Indiana. The
British Petroleum.
BP. And to be just a little more technical, we're going to call Thomas over here because he lives right near the BP plant. He's our more or less our expert we're going to go to. Hey, Thomas. So we're talking about the pet coke right now. As it goes to the refinery, it gets comes from Alberta, Canada, gets pipelined and goes to the plant. And it gets refined over there. It's distilled. And then this is the byproduct. This is the residue after they produce the gasoline and other liquid products from it. This is a solid, and Thomas can fill you in on some of the other details.
When they're piping it down here, they're piping what's called dilbit, diluted bitumen, right, which is like tar. It's a thick, viscous material. And what they're doing is, right now, BP is only refining about 20 to 25% of tar sands. They're using a blend right now. And from now until the end of January, they're going to increase the blend of tar sands up to 90 to 95%. Right, when the dilbit comes down here, right, they're going to separate the condensate from right. the bitumen. And they're going to put the bitumen in the distillation tower and then burn it off. And then when it comes off, when it gets gasified, it then gets sent to the coking unit. A part of it gets sent to the coking unit, which they send through a process. And the residue from the coking unit is what's left over, and that's called pet coke. Now, pet coke's also a fuel. And so it's a commodity that they're looking to sell another place, but right now it's sitting here and piled up. But the one thing you're going to realize is by the end of January and early February, when BP goes full blast with bitumen or with tar sands, the market is going to change overnight. Because now you have the largest tar sands refinery going to almost nearly 100% tar sands. It's going to change the market immediately. Right now with the blend that they're using WTI blend with the tar sands blend. And that's a light sweet crude. And so it's going to be a much, much denser, heavier crude. And so you're going to see right now, by the end of February, you're going to start to see piles growing three times what you're seeing
three
now.
Three times.
Is this a month's worth of output?
Oh, no. Weeks? This is probably a couple of days over here. Uh-huh. It keeps coming in. And this is a small operation, by the way. Now, the larger operation, you see those mountains out there off in the distance over there? That's KCBX, owned by the notorious Koch brothers. The K in KCBX stands for Koch Carbon. And they have a large operation over there and an even larger operation that they recently bought from Detroit Energy over this way. We're going to take a ride over there before we head back to the office, and we're going to see where their new location is going to be. So this stuff is coming in over here. It might be getting offloaded over here at Beamsterboer, which is the smallest of the three properties, but it's the most visible from this vantage point. And you can also, with them being snow-covered, they don't look quite as vivid, you know, the big black hills. Over there, you see a tarped area there. That's salt, and that's what the city is going to be using. And you have crushed limestone over here. You have some other crushed stone off in the distance there.
Oh, that's a limestone kiln over there.
This was, This it's shut down. They had so many EPA violations, they finally left here about 3 or 4 years ago and shut it down. Instead, they're operating over in Indiana because Indiana is more lax on their regulations on that.
I have a question. Anybody know about how this stuff burns compared to anthracite or soft coal?
Yes.
George can tell you. This is George Smolka.
Is this cleaner, dirtier?
Higher in carbon content.
But it's calcined, which means put through a kiln.
at about 1,200 degrees C, a lot of the junk burns off. If it's just green coke as is, and it's burned, there's an awful lot of junk in it. I don't know how dirty it is. We need to get FOIA or some other means, get recent analysis from the EPA. If we get that, we'll have some idea of how bad it is. Right now, the only analyses that are available are very old, and they deal with pet coke that wasn't produced by this system.
From this source.
Exactly.
What we do know is that it's got a much higher carbon content than coal, and therefore, in the United States, they don't permit this stuff to be burned in its pure form.
Okay.
They will allow it in power plants. Michigan still is burning some of it. They mix it with coal. So it is being used somewhat in the United States, but almost 100% of this stuff is going to be shipped off
overseas,
to India, China, Mexico.
If they continue to buy it.
They are, because it's
otherwise, what are they going to do with it? They can't landfill it. It's too damn much.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay? Otherwise, they have to use a hazardous landfill.
Yeah.
Have you any idea what that costs?
Plus, it's a valuable commodity.
They'd be out of business.
Right. And it's valuable.
Yeah, their profit margin would drop to zero.
Is it contaminated with heavy metals?
Radioactivity? Yeah. Vanadium is one of the worst. The second thing that it's full of is sulfur.
Okay.
A lot of sulfur, a lot of vanadium. Vanadium is a serious problem in many respects. It can mimic chromium, although it isn't as toxic.
A carcinogen.
I'd have to double check on that.
Okay.
I don't want to stick my
foot. Chromium is
chromium is a serious carcinogen. Right. Yeah, vanadium has many of the same chemical properties, but I don't think it's quite as toxic. However, at the levels that this exists at, it's a problem. Okay, there's heavy metal contamination. Period.
Right.
So
oh, yeah.
You know that at some level, this is going to be toxic to all kinds of things. The question is, at what level?
So if there was nobody buying it, then it would just be stuck here then, right?
Well, but that's the whole point. If they couldn't get rid of it, they would have to shut down. There isn't enough room to store this much.
Right.
As it accumulates day to day, week to week, at the level that they're projecting, there's no way in hell they could continue it. They'd bury Gary, East Chicago, and most of the towns in a 200 foot over the tops of the buildings.
So what was just pointed out to us over here, an observation was made that these came in from Lamont. Now, this is something new. At first, we were just getting the stuff from over at the BP refinery in Whiting.
Right. The barge has Lamont stenciled on it.
Right. And there's a Citgo refinery over there that's also doing tar sands there. So they're sending their stuff over here, too. So we're getting it from over there and from the BP refinery. When that coker goes online at BP, they're predicted to be using producing about 2.2 million tons per year. But altogether, they're trying to get permits to handle and store up to 11 million tons a year. And that's what the Illinois EPA put on hold until we resolve this problem about this crap blowing all over people's homes. You can see how close we are to the residential area by looking right over here. And we're going to take a ride and to KCBX, what we call KCBX South, and then we're going to start heading back. But you're going to see how people's homes are even closer to the entrance to the gate over here.
Okay.
So we can do that.
Down the Kalsag also is the ExxonMobil plant in Joliet. They're on the channel too. So they've gone to tar sands themselves. We just don't know the percentage of blends yet that they're doing. We just know that BP is going to go nearly 100% release very soon. And that's the big project that's going to change the market. So.
And we should be able to get that information from the O'Brien Lock and Dams over there. I don't see why they would. Right, what's coming through. Okay, so did we see enough? We got some pictures and we talked about it here. We're going to go a few blocks south of here. And we're going to get back in the cars. We're going to go a couple blocks south of here.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to lead you to the gate.
So, Bob, you were saying that
Yeah, I had to leave early. I got a rock in my eye, a bit of soot, and I hate to think where it's from, even though it's covered with a half an inch of snow right now. It's still generating a lot of particulates up in the air. So, my goodness, I'd hate to be a pedestrian walking across this bridge each day.
Right, and I get that. My eyes are pretty sensitive to that. I can feel it in my left eye right now.
So much for dust suppression with the snowstorm.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be coming all through the neighborhood. A good indication, I may come out here tomorrow morning just to look at the ground and maybe get some close-up photographs of how speckled it will look. It'll look like you took a pepper shaker around, and we've taken samples from people's windowsills and railings and from their automobiles and stuff, and they're being analyzed now. The Natural Resources Defense Council has been helping us get some of the stuff analyzed. This is the entrance right here to the Koch Industries here, Koch Terminals Company. And this is where their main terminal is going to be. It comes in and piles up here, and then big freighters come up the river and they load those freighters up. And you see all those things sticking out of the ground? Those are their water suppression systems. And as you can tell, they're not operating today because it's cold. The freighters go off to China and India, Mexico and Canada. And as I said, right now they're a little bit low because they've been cited. They were cited for violations by the Illinois EPA. So they have been slowing down and cleaning up. But these piles can reach to five stories high. Yeah, right over here are houses. And speaking of those black speckles, during that big dust up in August, there were people picnicking back here. And there's right over there, you can see a fence. That's a Little League field right there. Kids were sent scurrying home. They were all, you know, having this stuff beat on their faces and breathing it in their lungs. And
a major
windstorm preceding a rain, and all the kids had to quit. And one of the people, one of the folks was having a backyard picnic, sent us a picture of a fruit salad with Cool Whip on it, and it looked exactly as I described with the pepper shake, you know, shaking on it. So, and the piles are low right now, as I was telling them. They've been moving a lot of the stuff out. Because of their violations and stuff, they're not bringing so much in.
The sprinkler system.
Yeah, that's their sprinklers out there, which are not operating. And I don't know if any of you experienced it, but Bob and I both did. We got, like, dust in our eyes, you know, particulate matter from just that short time we were up on the bridge. Yeah, yeah. They have big, huge... You can see it from here, a big, huge operation over there. That's on the river, that tall structure. And they have conveyors there that stretch almost across the river, believe it or not. They're so huge. So I wanted to point out that a famous picture was taken right across over from over here on August 30th when we had the big dust storm. And I also want to point out there's three lonesome houses over on 107th and Burley up ahead here. And two of those three houses, the people are on respirators that are in there. The third house, the kids have asthma problems. The Gomez family in this apartment building on the corner right here, they're on the second floor. Watch WTTW this week. Elizabeth Brackett is going to do a lengthy documentary special. She was up in that apartment on the second floor there.
Right, the windows face the coke piles.
Yes. So the Rosas family right there, they have asthma problems, and Maria Rosas is on a respirator. Over here, Peter Cierney, I think that's how you pronounce his name, lives here. He's got three respirators, one in each room of his little house here. So Peter also has COPD, I think it's called.
Chronic obstructive pulmonary
disease. That's right, yeah. And he's there in the window. I'm sure he's watching a football game right now. And you can see the houses are, you know, darkened. Right across the river was Wisconsin Steel. They were the first steel company in this area. They were called Brown Steel when they first located over there in 1874. So this was heavy industry from the 1800s.
Day one.
Yeah. And this was largely Eastern European ethnic community, mostly Poles, Croatians, Serbians, and other Slavics. Now we had this little field house. We had our first neighborhood, our community meeting in here. The room handles about 35 to 40 people on this end of it, and we had over 120 people show up. Very angry. The alderman came out, and they really gave him the business, and demanding how did he let this happen on his watch, and what he's going to do about it.
What did he have to say for himself?
Well, he said something's going to happen. Something has to happen.
Well, something is happening. It's just,
something is happening.
No, violation of air standards.
They've cited both the KCBX and the Beamster Bore operations, especially the Beamster Bore, got hit with a number of violations, operating without a permit since 2008. Can you imagine that? They've asked for an injunction to shut them down. So they've asked for injunctive relief. Lisa Madigan, the Attorney General, has filed suit against both companies. And
Beamster Bore European?
Beamster Bore is a Dutch name. They're local. They've been in this neighborhood since early on. They were serviced the steel industry. They were originally called Beamster Bore Slag and Ballast. So they took slag out of the steel mills, and they used some of it for ballast in the ore shipping. And so they've always been a hauler, big-time hauler. And they used to stock coal over there, too. So we have had coal problems from the beginning. There's that little league field I pointed out down there, right across from the...
So this looks kind of...
Yeah, it's a state conservation area, they call it. Right. Mm-hmm. On the right, you see new factories over here. These were part of Ford Supplier Park. Now, the big Ford plant, they're the largest... largest employer in the area, is just about a mile west of here, and it's the longest continuing automaking plant in the United States. Even has been there longer than the plants up in Michigan. And Chicago.
Is this
Avenue O, but the plant, but the Ford plant is on Torrance. Yes.
Okay.
So anyway, the back in mid 2000s, around 2004 and 5, Ford, with the assistance of the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago, made a huge investment over here. The city and the state made huge infrastructure investments to provide for Ford to bring a lot of their auxiliary plants, ancillary plants down from Michigan to be close to the plant over here. And they started cranking up their production of the Ford Taurus and not the Explorer, the other one, the Escape, I think. And so that those were mass produced over here. They're really kicking out cars here, I gotta tell you. I don't know where they're selling them, but the Ford is really producing a lot of cars over here. They're also producing that Navigator that the police use. I think it's called a Navigator. And so this Ford plant really is in high gear right now, operating three shifts around the clock.
So a lot of the workers come out of this neighborhood?
You know, it's difficult to find anybody from the neighborhood that works there. There's a few here and there. Surprisingly, a lot of the employees come from across the border in Indiana. And one of the reasons that they give is they say that a lot of the people around here can't pass the drug tests.
School over here?
This is Henry Clay right here. Closer to the Petco piles is Jane Adams Elementary School, Washington Elementary and Washington High School. Now people from around here are saying that they're feeling the effects of this Petco since it's come in to the area in a big way. More dust, more dirt and soot in their homes, grit in the air, and more health problems. Some are saying they're experiencing respiratory problems that they didn't have. I live in historic Pullman, which is a couple miles west, and folks over there now are saying that they think that they are feeling the effects of this too. And it's not all that often that we have a wind out of the east, but when we do, it's usually pretty, it's a real doozy.